Mark Twain once worried, "It ain't the parts of the Bible that I can't understand that bother me. It's the parts that I do understand." We're reminded today in this text that the Bible reserves the right to speak its own mind. That the Bible will always refuse to be domesticated. Peter is shaken again to his core and he reacts. We also know the Spirit can work its way through the hardest heart of stone. And even though at this point Peter struggles so much with the message he hears, after the resurrection, Peter will be 10,000 times the disciple he is in this moment. Let us listen for God's word to us today. "Then he began to teach them that the Son of Man must undergo great suffering and be rejected by the elders, the chief priests, the scribes, and be killed, and after 3 days rise again. He said all of this quite openly, and Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him. But turning and looking at his disciples, he rebuked Peter and said, 'Get behind me, Satan, for you are setting your mind not on divine things, but on human things.' He called the crowd with his disciples and said to them, 'If any want to become my followers, let them deny themselves and take up their cross and follow me. For those that want to save their life will lose it. And those who lose their life for my sake and for the sake of the good news will save it. For what will it profit them to gain the whole world and forfeit their life? Indeed, what can they give in return for their life? Those who are ashamed of me and my words in this adulterous and sinful generation, of them the Son of Man will also be ashamed when he comes in his glory, the glory of his Father, with the holy angels.'" Friends, this is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. Meriwether Lewis stood at the top of a ridge. Well, not quite the top of a ridge, but just below it. And he stood in front of a fast flowing stream, and he kneeled down and he drank deeply out of the stream. He had been journeying for 18 months across hundreds and hundreds of miles through many, many obstacles to get to this point. He'd lost a colleague along the way. He'd negotiated lands that he never thought he would see. And after 18 months, he finally stands at the headwaters of the Missouri River. Lewis, his partner Clark, and the Corps of Discovery — what a great name for an organization, the Corps of Discovery — President Jefferson had sent them out on a mission. It was to be for exploration or scientific discovery, for analyzing the commercial value of the new land that America had just acquired. But it was really to find a Northwest Passage. All the experts, all the lore, everything that they'd known about America had led to this point, to find that safe passage from east to west. Hundreds of years looking for this mythical Northwest Passage. No less than 2 hit squads had been sent from Spain to try and stop Lewis and his team. And so there, standing at the headwaters, he kneels down. 18 months, the worst part of his journey over. From here on out, yes, there would be challenges, but it'd all be smooth sailing, or at least smooth boating from here on out. And so he knelt, and he drank deeply of the water, thankful that the worst part of the journey was over. And he wrote these words: "The road took us to the most distant fountain of the waters of the mighty Missouri, in search of what we have spent so many a toilsome day and restless night. Thus far, I had accomplished one of those great objects on which my mind has been unalterably fixed for many years. Judge then of the pleasure I felt in satisfying my thirst with this pure and ice-cold water. Here I halted for a few minutes and rested myself. 2 miles below, McNeil had exultantly stood with one foot on either side of the rivulet and thanked his God that he had lived to bestride the mighty and hereafter deemed endless Missouri. After refreshing ourselves," and then he continues, if you can imagine, 18 months to get to this point, to stand one leg on either side of the mighty Missouri, knowing that just over the ridge would be the Columbia River, and you could put your boats, maybe after a long portage, into the Columbia and sail smoothly down all the way to the Pacific. He would secure his place in history. He would secure commerce for this new nation. Sure, there would be challenges. Sure, there would be dangers. But all the experts, all his training told him that the hardest part was over. And then the bottom drops out. Or more realistically, he climbs to the very top of the mountain. And he says this: "After refreshing ourselves, we proceeded to the top of the dividing ridge, from which I discovered an immense range of mountains still to the west of us, with their tops still partially covered in snow." In typical understatement, he's just seen the Rockies for the first time. And that smooth canoe trip down through the Columbia all the way to the Pacific, it's not there. He's thousands of miles from where he needs to be, and instead of a calm river, most Americans have never seen mountains that high. Everything he'd been taught told him that, well, maybe the mountains would be like the Appalachian Mountains, like the foothills around Glasgow, and that it was going to be an easy path, and he knew where he was going. And then he gazes at these mountains, reaching up to the sky covered in snow, and he realizes the path that he thought is not the path he's going to take. All that he had expected to find was different. And all the rules that had led him up to this point, all the skills, all the supplies, all their work, would not prepare them for the mountains to come. Peter stood, hearing Jesus saying these things quite openly, and the bottom drops out. This isn't the king I expected. This isn't the Messiah that I thought would happen. And it happens to Peter again and again. Every time he thinks he's got the gospel figured out, every time he thinks he has Christ figured out, Jesus refuses to be domesticated. And Peter's completely thrown off course. Peter stands in front of his own Rocky Mountains, trying to understand what it is to climb to the top. But it would take until the resurrection before Peter would learn what it was. And after the resurrection, he was 10,000 times the disciple he'd been before. But in that moment, the bottom drops out, and he does the only thing he knows to do. And he pulls Jesus aside and he begs him. He begs him so strongly, the Bible uses the word rebuke. And Jesus says those words that we don't need to take too seriously for too long, but he says in strong words, "Get behind me. You're setting your eyes on these things." At some point in our life, we'll face our own Western Range. I still remember the first time I saw the Western Range of the Rockies. 3 years before, I'd seen the Alps for the very first time, and I thought those were the largest mountains I'd ever seen. And when I saw the front range of the Rockies, I was awed. I'd been driving in a van that had been curtained off for 4 hours so that we couldn't see the mountains until we were right there before. And it filled the sky. It went from east to west and as far up as I could imagine in my brain. And the further we drove towards them, the larger and larger they got. And even in the middle of the mountains, they seemed unending. And I can only imagine what Clark thought when he crested to the top of the ridge. And instead of finding a nice, peaceful river, I mean, this wasn't the River Air. Instead of finding a nice, smooth path, he goes up and up and up. We all face the Western range at some point in our lives, personally, spiritually, corporately, culturally. We all come to a crossroads, big or small, the place where we're entering into uncharted territory, the place where the map ends and all the skills we assumed would see us through to the finish line no longer apply. All of our parades, all of our plans, one day may come to a crashing halt. And like Peter, like Clark, we find ourselves at a crossroads, trying to figure out what it is to go forward when all of our supplies say we're to be going down a river. And so Clark had a decision to make, to go forward and up the mountain or to turn and go back. And Peter had a decision to make, to follow or to flee. Lent can be such a journey. We're invited to cross that stream, to crest to the top of the ridge and to gaze out and to look upon the horizon. It's a time of reflection, a time of introspection, a time of challenge. Also, as I said last week, a time to be reminded of God's grace. But we're challenged to look upon the cross where all our plans, all our earthly certainties are stripped away and recast by the promise of an empty tomb. And we hear a call to go off the map, like Lewis and Clark, to discover that what might be in front of us is unexpected. But to know for sure that what is in front of us is nothing like what was behind. No gentle slope, no prairie, no winding river, all their plans, all their expectations needing to be readjusted. They would need to change. They would need to adapt. They would need to learn what it was to canoe in the mountains. What a preposterous idea. One doesn't climb a mountain to canoe. Yet that's what Lewis and Clark had to do. To learn to canoe in the mountains, to take all that they knew, all that they had assumed was certain, and adjust, to readjust themselves to a new reality, a mountain standing before them. And Peter, again and again, had to readjust his expectations of what was possible. The king that he thought wasn't going to come to pass. The Christ that he had longed for, that he had expected, kept being subverted by the Jesus that he met. And it was more wonderful and challenging and scary than he could ever imagine. And Peter had to learn how to canoe in the mountains. And he would. Peter was 10,000 times the disciple after the resurrection than he was before. He would learn to canoe, to become the rock, not perfect, but full of purpose and direction, and most clearly, Spirit. God never promises us an easy path nor a clear map. God does, however, promise to be with us on the journey, to take the risks with us, and never, never leave us abandoned or forsaken. Lost, we may feel, but never alone. And so we come to this table today. We come to this table today knowing that the world is changing around us, that the culture is shifting and the old certainties are no longer solid, that all that we've been taught and learned to expect in earthly terms is changing. They even say that the rate of change is changing and it gets faster and faster and faster. And instead of finding an easy slope and a gentle path down to the Pacific, we're on the Western Range, and the path is up and up and covered with snow. Yet we come to this table. We come to this table remembering that our preparation for the journey is finally not one of strategy or plans or economics or even the right theology. But at this table, we're fed with a grace. We're filled with the Spirit. We're given a promise that will outlast even the edge of the map. We meet a Christ who has promised to come and walk with us, to join us on the journey and never leave us abandoned. I wish that the Bible gave us a clear roadmap to our lives, to what church looked like. Oh, it gives us some great principles, but it will ever stand apart and refuse to be domesticated and push us forward, even off the map. We reach the top of the hill and we only see another mountain range, but we do not go alone. God goes with us, and we have one another, and we canoe in the mountains, and we embrace God's grace, and we remember to pause and drink deeply of the waters of baptism and rest and think and pause and pray and sing at this table. For where the map ends, grace begins. At this table, God says you are accepted. At this table, God says you are beloved. And no matter where I might lead you, I will go with you. And in fact, we have the promise. A promise to the scared and confused disciples who were well off the map, all their certainty stripped away. And the risen Christ says, "Lo, I am with you always, even until the end of the age." Lent is a season to encounter again the reality that the world around us is shifting so quickly, and the old certainties can't be counted on in the same way they could before. But our faith, our rock, our assurance is with us still. And we're never, never left abandoned. Wherever you find yourself on life's journey, whether you feel like you're just about to cross the top of the ridge and have that long canoe ride home, come to this table and be reminded that you are not alone. Whether you're in the middle of that climb that you never thought that you would make and the rope you begin feels like it's going to fray, come to this table and be reminded that you're not alone and that together with the Spirit we uphold one another. Together with the Spirit we journey off the map into the unknown of God's grace and God's calling and God's providence. Safe? By no means. Blessed? Absolutely. Alone? Never. Thanks be to God. Amen.